New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
We're live. What's up, everybody? Welcome to West by Pod, podcast about WVU football, the Big 12 Conference, and your historic Big 12 powerhouse, the Arizona Wildcats. I'm Joel Bracken. I'm at WV Stats Guy. He's Jordan Pinto. He's at Game Day Shorts. We're getting close to the 2024 football season, and we are getting to the back half. We're close to the end of our summer series, running through deep dives on all the teams that West Virginia is going to play this year. This episode's Arizona Wildcats, which is just like last year. We got some new teams to learn about, and you don't have their year-to-year sort of in the back of your head. Arizona was a fresh one for me. I didn't know a lot about them.
So, yeah.
So how are you feeling about some new additions this year, and how are things going in general, Jordan?
I'm excited. I mean, I think Arizona State, I think the fun thing about all these teams is they're going to be fantastic road trips. Boulder, Tempe, Tucson, and Utah? What is that? That's not Salt Lake. Where is that in Utah?
Provo.
Provo. No, Provo's BYU, isn't it? Utah's Salt Lake.
Oh, no. Utah is... That's a good question. I don't know what town they're actually in.
Jesus. What are professionals?
It is Salt Lake. You're right.
Okay. Yeah.
I doubted you.
BYU's Provo. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I was about to say Salt Lake, and then I was like, no, that's BYU. Anyways, four fantastic road trips. I think in the modern era of realignment, it was good to move west. Would love to have a couple more teams to the east as well, just for ease of travel. But as far as additions go, I think they're fun. Arizona's a fun team. Colorado obviously gets a lot of headlines. Utah's got as good a chance, Benny, as long as Whittingham's there to kind of stake a claim at the top of the conference. So, yeah, no, and then Arizona State's kind of Arizona. I do feel like Arizona State is like a sleeping giant. I don't know if you've noticed, I don't know how far you've gotten in your dynasty simulations, but like Arizona State pulls some recruits. they got that Southern California pipeline, and they get pretty good by like the third or fourth year of your dynasty. So, like the additions generally. This is going to be CFP or CFB centric. Kid has been dipping his toe into some online play. We're 13-1.
Oh.
Won our first national championship and rode to the CFP on a walk-off kickoff return touchdown.
Like this, beautiful.
This dude, so I get the ball back, about a minute 50 left, and I'm thinking I'm just going to grind the clock down. It's against Texas, so like horns way the fuck down. I'm like, I'm going to grind this out and then kick a field goal. Walk off and do it that way. I go fucking three and out. This guy drives down the field, gets to probably my 30-yard line, and I think he thought he was just going to keep pounding it down my throat. I call like a couple straight blitzes, knock him back a little bit, and he kind of panicked and called a timeout with 7 seconds left. So kicked the field goal, had like 3 seconds left, and the young man just made the mistake of kicking it to Jaheim White. And, you know, the rest is history. So, so it's been good, man. Kind of put pause on my WVU dynasty. I'm waiting for the roster update with all the new numbers and Cole Taylor and all that stuff. But have the Musket Online dynasty that's going very well. Memphis out to a 5-0 start. Big win at Florida State. So we're cruising there. And then I got a Maxion dynasty with my friends where we're all Max schools. And that's just a, you know, rip-roaring good time too. So, yeah, man, how's life for you? I know you've been busy with work, but hopefully you're finding some time for pleasure as well.
Yeah, I've been busy, you know, sneaking in some games late in the evening. I have a Texas State dynasty going on right now. And then, yeah, I did one round of the Road to the College Football Playoff on the online. And I was just challenging myself to play as the lowest tier teams. Like, they have tiers 1 through 5. Yeah. And I have a screenshot I can show you. Of course, if you're listening, you can see it. I was playing as Western Kentucky, and the guy I was playing was Alabama. Milroe went 1 for 7 with 5 interceptions. wasn't a great day for him. So ran through, got the natty in year one in that. That's about all I've had.
With tier five.
Yeah, I played as Western Kentucky.
So you got some you got a little bit of game now. Okay.
Well, it's like, you know, it's the freshman setup, so I'm sure there's lots of first
times. I did have a lot of DNFs out there of guys where it's like midway through the second quarter and the game's like, "Do you want to quit?" And it's like, "Yeah, I do."
Yeah. So, other than that, things have been good. I kind of realizing now we're like 3 weeks out, so we got to wrap up our summer series here in the next week or two and get ready for a Penn State preview very, very soon.
It's kind of crazy. We need to record like probably 3 in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. And we had a delay in getting the map on. So we have the two recent ones out. We'll get these rest out before the season starts. They're good homework for us. It makes the season a lot easier. So any things coming out of fall camp, if you want to maybe do offense for this episode, anything, storylines that are catching your ear?
So a couple, you know, I think quarterback situation seems like it's in really, really good shape. Obviously, Garrett's Garrett. But, you know, I think that praise has come from all around, from offensive side, from defensive side, from all the coaches, that Nico looks like he may have taken that next step to the point where the offense isn't going to be hamstrung. You know, we're not going to be, remember the Titans 6 plays, give them time, they'll all work playbook when Nico's out there. We should be able to run the full offense, which is great. A couple of the freshman receivers getting mentioned. Obviously, Day-Day Farmer. Sounds like we want to get him the ball. Brandon Raymond's gotten a couple shout-outs. Seems like the new guys – dude, I mean, there's been a ton of Jaden Bray content, which makes me really happy. I know that listeners know, I've been super high on that transfer, like, since it happened. And it seems like he scores like 5 touchdowns a day that go viral on the WVU football social media channels. So love that. Seems like the first 3 receivers right now are going to be Bray, Clement, and Fox. Preston Fox is making plays. Clement's making plays, which is great. Matt Moore says we have 10 up front that he likes, which. Yeah. You know, so I don't know if the ceiling's as high as it was last year, obviously without Zach Frazier. But, you know, I think we're going to be able to field a decent offensive line, which is obviously critical. And then sneaky good one, man. So we have Cole Taylor, but it sounds like Greg Jenross, the number one JUCO tight end who we pulled in. You know, I don't think we know exactly what he is yet, but that he's like, he looks the part. And he makes plays, like, kind of thing. He's like 6'6", 235. You know, I don't know how well he'll be able to block. If we can play him and Taylor at the same time in like a, you know, 2 tight end, I don't know if either of them can really put their hand in the ground and be a 6th offensive lineman, quote unquote. But it's nice to know that we have another receiving tight end who at the very least we can get out there and throw the ball to. So, yeah, man, lots of good stuff. Freshman running backs apparently are flashing and pushing for that 3rd spot with behind Jesus Christ,
CJ.
Jaheim and CJ. Yeah, they're pushing Jalen Anderson for that third spot. So, dude, I mean, it's one of these things where, like, is this preseason propaganda? I don't know. I tend to think that it's like a lot of this is kind of like shaking out how we kind of thought or maybe hoped that it would. And, you know, this offense has a chance to be pretty good to really good. So, yeah, I'm loving it.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some PFF articles and stuff about our offense being criminally underrated coming into this season. Like, you know, the numbers that Garrett and Jaheim as a combo put up last year were pretty special when you, like, talk about a quarterback running back pair to have two guys who are, like, top 20 and a lot of metrics for PFF. So I'm excited. Go ahead.
Consider, like, a lot of it, Jaheim didn't even really play to the last six games of the season, and Garrett didn't really take off to the last six games of the season. Like, if you look at the back half of the season last year, the production those guys had was right up there with anybody in America. So,
yeah, and Garrett was hurt for early, you know, some out of conference and early conference play. So, yeah, it's super encouraging, and this is like the month of gearing your hopes up and taking in all of the positive, you know, feedback we're hearing from the coaches. I did catch one of the press conferences with Neil talking about, like, you know, it's a good problem to have, but now it's like we know who our one and two are. Who's going to be our three in this position? Who's going to be our third tight end? Who's going to be our, you know, you mentioned the running back situation, things like that.
Yeah.
Feels good when you're there because, you know, we're doing some deep dives on. I did my research on Arizona and Cincinnati this week, and both of those schools have a lot of positions that are new people coming in and. You know, a high, you know, number of like transfer guys who are projected to be starter. Whereas I feel like we have a lot of guys who we know what they are and we're like, yeah, this is how it's going to shake out. So,
yep, absolutely. So Arizona,
let's get into Arizona. All right. So last year, Arizona, they were in the Pac-12. It was a conference that used to exist. I guess it still technically does at this moment, but
one out. Yeah.
Yeah. The Conference of Champions. Though I just have to mention really quick, I saw an Olympic graphic with the ACC and somebody, the ACC guy was bragging about how they had three Stanford. Top schools and it was like Stanford and UCLA. So, you know, prominent ACC schools there, but yeah, Arizona. So they came from the pack. They are now in the Big 12. Last year was a pretty awesome year for Arizona football. They went 10-3. They really haven't experienced a lot of success in a long time. This was a majorly positive year. And it took a little bit to get going. They lost out of conference in Mississippi State. And then early in conference play, they lost to Washington, who, you know, obviously was a very good team. And then the following week, they lost to USC. There's a point in the season when they're 3-3. And all they do is run the table, beating 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 ranked teams the rest of the way out. I mean, just, you know, kind of got their feet under them, got their quarterback situation figured out, did not have that figured out in the fall. So, 10-3, awesome year for them. Vibe around the program, I think it has to be good. It has to be solid. Like, you're taking a massive step. So 2 years ago, they had one win. Last year, the year prior, they had 5 wins, and then to jump to 10. I mean, those are massive steps. You get your quarterback back, who is a big part of that. Maybe your particularly negative vibe would be your coaching staff is, you know, just kind of ditched. So that's a bummer. The guys who really built this up are gone. Your expectation this year, you're picked 5th in the media poll for the Big 12. You got a couple first place votes, and you're going to start the season ranked. 21st in the AP, I believe. So returning production, you're 33rd. Last year, you were 5th in beta rank offense and 29th in beta rank defense. I think you would be greedy to be asking for a much better situation for Arizona, given the state of this program for a while. I don't think I have it up right now, but you look at them on Sports Reference, and it's been a long time since Arizona has had sustained success. I think things are good. What are you thinking, Jordan? What's your vibe around Arizona?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really, really good team last year. You know, I think some of the Pac-12 was down. I know you mentioned however many ranked teams in the back half of the schedule. It was a lot of teams that ended up, I think, like, you know, 8-5. You know, so I think Washington was the one team that they played that you know, ended up, obviously, national runners-up, had an outstanding season that was really, really good. But they, I mean, they put it on them. You know, they put it on a lot of the teams. I think they were 7-2 in the conference. You mentioned losses to Washington, USC. Outscored their opponents by an average of 2 touchdowns, 35-21. You mentioned the Bedorank stuff. Like, the offense was elite, one of the best offenses in the country. Just a ridiculously good scheme. Ton of playmakers, obviously the quarterback. But the defense was pretty good too. You know, so... you know, I definitely understand why folks are high on them. I understand the AP ranking. It's cool that Arizona's good after obviously a long kind of a downswing. You know, I think the thing that stands out to me this is heading into this year is the turnover, right? Like, I mean, you know, you mentioned lots of new guys, lots of the playmakers from last year are gone. Coaching staff, whole new coaching staff coming in. I think we'll probably get into that here in a second. I, you know, maybe that's a good, a decent segue. But yeah, that's the thing that stands out to me most this year is the turnover. I think 18. You know, if you imagine a two deep with the 22 starting positions, 18 of the 44 on the two deep right now are transfers, and 24 transfers overall listed. You know, kind of on the extended depth chart. So lots of new faces on the field. And yeah, new faces on the sideline. I mean, are we excited about Brent Brennan and Dino Babers and Dwayne Akina?
I'm not personally. I mean, I'm excited that they're taking over the Arizona program, but I would not be particularly excited about Brent Brennan, your new head coach, coming from San Jose State. Do you know what they're seeing in this guy? Like, I mean, he had some success at San Jose, but like, honestly, not a lot. Like, he's not getting hired in your dynasty coaching carousel. He had a losing record there. Yeah, I mean, like, I think two successful years out of like 6 or 7. Yeah, sort of a head scratcher to me. But Jed Fish, the previous head coach, he left to Washington. So
Yeah. Which deserved, obviously, after the season we just described. But yeah, man, Brent Brennan, like, I don't know. I mean, the only selling point that I see is that he's from you know, kind of that part of the country, should be familiar just in terms of like having relationships for recruiting, things like that. But yeah, I mean, you said losing record, that kind of undersells. 34-48
in seven seasons,
only 3 winning seasons. You know, I think maybe the thing they're looking at, I think they went 7-1 the COVID year, and then had winning seasons in 22 and 23. So I think that was the first time they've had back-to-back winning seasons since the early 90s. So, you know, maybe not like insane success. I think they were 7-5 both years, maybe, but kind of uncommon for San Jose State. So maybe that's what you're looking at, is that, you know, this team is not a historically like a big winning program, and he, you know, he kind of won a little bit with them towards the end. You know, I think with regards to this year, the thing that and this is not an original point, I've heard some other people make this this comment, is 3-22 in the first 2 years. So, you know, not like he went into San Jose State and immediately flipped them and turned them into a winner, right? So, you know, can he come into Arizona and kind of pick up the pieces that were left behind and make a run at a Big 12 title? I don't know. You know, kind of looking at the coordinators, Babers is the offensive coordinator. And, you know, Syracuse always struck me as more of a defensive team while he was there. I think they peaked at 41st in offensive beta rank while Babers was there. Average ranking of 74th. So, like, this was not a very good offensive team with him as the head coach. Mm-hmm. The defensive coordinator, I thought it was kind of cool. He's like an Arizona lifer. So this is a holdover hire, obviously, to be like, you know, here's the culture of the program. I think that's the motivation for this hire. But has been both the offensive and defensive coordinator at Arizona in his lifetime. So
that's something.
Kind of a cool thing. But overall, I mean, yeah, this I don't know if I'd say it's a red flag, but it certainly doesn't move the needle for me in terms of, like, you know, like, wow, look at this insane hire for Arizona. Like, they're going to be fine.
Yeah, I don't think I'd necessarily be excited with everything you're bringing back about the coaching staff change. I'd say it's probably a net negative for me, just on paper. But we'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. I mean, like I mentioned, Arizona had not even had a winning season since Rich Rodriguez was the coach. So this previous year. So we'll see what form of Arizona is going to be taking on in the new Big 12. I think that is the fun thing about adding new teams to these conferences, is that you kind of get to see stacked up. It's a new era, and see how the, you know, how the chips fall. So Arizona coming off an awesome year. Let's get into partially why. Noah Fifita, the quarterback, he didn't start the season, and that was, you know, I think part of the issue. But once he took over, you know, I think the team trajectory kind of changed, and definitely the offense trajectory changed. I guess when I actually looked at some of his PFF stuff, I was a little, I kind of feel like I expected more just from how many times I've heard his name and seen offensive numbers about them. He had 7 big time throws all of last year.
Yeah.
And doesn't strike me on paper as the kind of guy who likes to huck it downfield. 73% completion, but only 7 big time throws to 9 turnover worthy plays, actually a negative ratio, which is not good. I mean, that's not what you want. So, he's going to be the guy going forward. I think he's your mainstay here in the offense. What's your impressions of him?
Yeah, this is why we do the podcast together, Joel, because I feel like I was kind of on the same page, man. I was like a little underwhelmed by the numbers. I think the things that jumped out to me when you watch him play is, so first of all, like he's kind of talked about as a dual threat. The running numbers are almost non-existent, but then you watch him play, he's a slippery motherfucker, man. Like he moves really well, in the pocket, scrambles. You know, maybe to pull an NCAA 25 reference, not so much of a scramble, but more of an improviser, mm-hmm. Kind of a scrambles to throw kind of guy, but gets the ball out quick. I think that was part of the scheme. Fish, I think, set him up for success like brilliantly. I think that's honestly one of the places where they might take a step back this year, is the scheme last year was just insanely good. But the ball comes out quickly. The ball comes out in the right spots, right? He doesn't put it in harm's way. You referenced the lack of big time throws, but 23 touchdowns. So like, you know, he's getting the ball to his play. He's not necessarily like throwing dots, right? Like he's getting the ball to playmakers. They're making plays. And you know, I think as we get through the offense here, we'll kind of learn, you know, that a lot of those dudes who were making the plays last year, maybe aren't there this year. I think where he can take a step forward, like you mentioned it, pushing the ball downfield a little bit more. I think he only had a 7.6 ADOT, right? The 2.3, yeah, which is low. Maybe that's not something you necessarily want to do. I don't know. I think I'm mostly interested to see how it changes this year with Babers coming in, how his scheme will compare to Fish. Like I would imagine, as well as it went last year, you'd try and plagiarize a lot of it, right? But I think there have been some things that have come out, like maybe a little bit less play action. I don't know necessarily if they're going to push the ball downfield as much. I think he did that a little bit more as the season went on, kind of like the last quarter of the season. But a very good player. He's going to be one of these guys where he is a fucking pain in the ass to play against. You know, he's a guy where we got him. Fuck, he just hit a 12-yard completion on 3rd and 10. You know, like he's one of those guys for sure. Really good player. I don't know. I don't understand the love he gets compared to maybe say Garrett Green. Mm-hmm. But very good player. Especially like you said, last year, first year as a starter, you would think that he's only going to get better. So, the worst guys to have running your offense for sure.
100%. Yeah, I don't want to say he's like not good. He's very good. He rated just a handful of guys beneath Garrett Green last year, in the quarterback, the offensive grade on PFF. So clearly gets the job done. He's just not like a cannon and going to be launching the ball downfield. And
He's a little guy. He's only like 5'10", 5'11". So mm-hmm. Yeah.
And last year the offense had the benefit of the running game. Which, you know, I think they had some guys in the backfield last year that they liked. Jonah Coleman was a big one, and he is transferring along with the head coach to Washington.
Yeah.
That's a bummer because last year he averaged almost 7 a carry on 122 attempts, 92.2 grade. That's a player who still has eligibility to not get him back. That one hurts. Your next two guys in terms of touches, DJ Williams and Michael Wiley, both gone as well in the backfield. So you're kind of searching for a signal here in the backfield. They get some transfers in. The names are Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt and Quali Conley. So those are going to be your guys. I'm looking at my Cincinnati notes. So JCM coming from Alabama State, and then he also has been in New Mexico, so he's a little bit of a journeyman already, right?
Yep.
And he had a great year last year at New Mexico. I have just written down in my notes here, he has 500 career rushes, averaging, and his career's average 4.7 a carry. So he's been around the block. This is like a veteran pickup, at least, to be a guy who's going to come in the backfield and I assume take the bulk of the carries here. Your other transfer, Conley, he's coming out of San Jose, so following with the head coach, Brent Brennan. So those are going to be your guys, but yeah, your three leading carry guys from last year are gone in the run game.
Yeah, you mentioned Coleman to Washington. The other two, Wiley and Williams, are undrafted free agents, so they're both in training camps right now in the NFL, right? So three really good players. Yeah, I think the only dude who had a carry last year who's back is Rayshon Luke, who's currently listed at third on the depth chart. Averaged 4.1 a carry, had one touchdown, so not a significant contributor. Kroski-Merritt didn't do shit at Bama State for 4 years. Went nuts at New Mexico last year. Averaged 6.3 a carry, 17 touchdowns, 64 missed tackles forced, 39 explosives. So, I think he can probably pick up a lot of the ground production. Conley wasn't a full-time starter. Didn't look like he started some, and then others he was listed as a P for playing. But he was productive. I think the significant loss here, man, especially like if you go and watch the Fifita highlights, he threw to the running backs a lot. So they're losing 59 targets, 52 catches, 600 yards, and 6 touchdowns just from the running backs in the passing game. Conley seems like he can do a little bit of that if you look at his numbers, but Kroski-Merritt has not shown any receiving ability as a 5-year journeyman at the college level. So I think, maybe they can pick up most of the rushing production, but a huge piece of the passing game last year was the running back. Out of the backfield and running back running passing routes. And I'm not sure either of these guys are going to be as good as any of the three who they lost. So backfield, I think, takes a step aside from Fifita, I guess, if you count him as backfield. I think the running back room is considerably worse than last year.
Yeah, I agree. And you mentioned about just the number of balls they threw to the running backs. In general, they threw a lot. Their pass to run ratio was top 15 in the country, and actually over the last three games in the season it was like fifth or something. So they like to get the ball out in space, and when you look at Fifita, even his like first couple games of the season, his A dot is like negative. It's like his average depth of target is negative. It's screens and touch passes and those kind of things. So get the ball in space. All right, so moving to pass catchers. You got to start with McMillan. Do you know how to say his first name?
Tetaroa?
Tetaroa? McMillan? This is your first...
Mac?
There you go. He's your first All-Big 12 entry for the team. They threw him the ball a bajillion times last year. 117 targets. And he had an 85 grade PFF, which is very high. You lose your next two target guys. You lose your next target guy, Jacob Cohen, who also was over 100 targets, 112. Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a team have two guys over 100 targets, and that's pretty absurd.
They spun him around, man.
Yeah, so they're getting the ball out to the pass catchers, out to people in space. Your other guys back, Montana, Lemonu, Craig, they got a lot of hyphenated names on this team. He had 39 targets last year. And what about your tight end position? They threw it to the tight end a good bit last year. Your tight end, he's gone. Tanner McLaughlin, 51 targets to the tight end. But just really looking at your top two guys, both over 110 targets, you get the one guy back. And McMillan had 1,200 yards last year, 10 touchdowns. I mean, can see why he's all Big 12, just the grades alone.
Have you watched him play at all?
I don't think I have. I know he's 8'5", or 6'5", 210.
He's fucking ridiculous, man. If there's a better receiver in the country, then good for that guy. This dude, he's a former five-star. I think the cool low-key storyline here, played with Fifita in middle school and in high school. So long history. Obviously a lot of chemistry between those guys. Yeah, lines up all over the field. I want to say, you know, he's outside like 70, 75% of the time, but plays in the slot a good bit too. 6'5", insane catch radius. I think only Roma Dunze had more contested catches last year. And then he's like surprisingly good after the catch. Like, I'm not saying he's fucking Randy Moss or anything, but he has like, cause I don't think he has like that elite top end speed. Like, he's probably like a 4'5" guy, but he has really good like body swerve. You know, those guys who have like the body swerve where like they just, it seems like they have a really easy time putting defenders off balance. Like, he's one of those guys. So like he'll get yards after the catch too. But yeah, man, I mean, you mentioned Cowing and McLaughlin, two more NFL guys. Cowing was a fourth round draft pick in San Francisco. McLaughlin's Cincinnati, 163 targets, 124 catches, 1200 plus yards combined. And 1500 touchdowns or 1500. They weren't that good. 15 touchdowns combined between the two. And I mentioned the Fifita, like, oh no, we got him. Oh shit. Third down conversion. Cowing and McLaughlin were those guys a lot of the time. Like, if you watch the plays, like McLaughlin especially just seemed like he was one of those dudes who was always between two linebackers, at the first down marker, you know, just that annoying fucking tight end. And they bring in Sam Olsen from San Jose State to do that. He was a below replacement level player at San Jose State last year, graded out like 50, like in the high 50s somewhere. So like, huge drop off in production from the tight end position. Lamonius Craig, supposed second option this year. I mean, he had some production, 27 catches, 291 yards, three touchdowns, but like, is he going to be Cowing this year? You know, I don't see it. It's like, I don't know. I mean, like, McMillan's still there, right? And if you're going to have the hardest thing to figure out is who the alpha is, right? We've seen that over the last several years. Like, finding a true number one receiver is really hard. And when you find one, like, it makes it much easier for 2, 3, 4 to slide into place. So you still have four, but on paper, man, like, the options here are like, again, much, much worse than they were a year ago. I don't know how else to say it. Like, I mean, just plainly stated, it's worse. It's worse than it was last year.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to agree. And I'm curious too. I think just like scheme is a big portion here. Like, the way that they were getting the ball out in volume, but these short passes, is that going to be a mainstay in the Brent Brennan or Dino Babers offense? You know, I think that could be a pretty important shift in the way they do things. Sort of shifting to the offensive line, you got another All Big 12 guy, Jonah Savanea. They got some tough to pronounce now. I'm glad I'm not a play-by-play.
Samoan pipeline. Tier 3 Samoan pipeline, baby.
Well, last year, when you look at their offensive line, the pass blocking was good. I think they were in the top of the conference in pass, near the top in pass blocking, but the run blocking was not the same story, which is kind of surprising to me, seeing that they had an over 1,000-yard rusher. But definitely lean towards pass. So you have an All Big 12 guy on the offensive line. And what about production getting back here? What do you have on their returning guys? No transfers starting on the offensive line.
No, yeah. So they were at like undersold it, like first in the Pac-12 pass blocking, second in Power 5. So really good at pass blocking last year. I think, again, like I said, Fifita's slippery as fuck. Kind of like how, you know, Garrett erases mistakes from the offensive line. Fifita did that for them as well. But yeah, they have 4 or 5 starters back. Center's back, graded out 63.8. Guards are back. They graded out 70.2 and 62.8. Tackles back. You mentioned the All Big 12 preseason graded to 70.2. I think the concern is you lose Jordan Morgan, the other tackle, who graded out an 83.4. So you lose by far your best guy, and he was a first round pick to Green Bay, right? So you lose a fucking capital D dude, the offensive line, and you replace him with a guy who played guard for them last year and graded out at a 57.1 at guard. So like, you know, I think that's I don't know. There's some nice continuity there. Like, the guy's name is Raymond Polito. Did he grade out shitty because he was a tackle who was masquerading as a guard last year and he'll be better this year? Or, you know, is he bad and that could be a weakness for them? You know, I don't know. I think generally, again, you know, they'll probably be fine up front because, again, Fifita is going to erase a lot of mistakes. But yeah, I mean, you're losing your best guy and replacing him with a replacement level player. So yeah. I can't imagine they're quite as good as they were last year. I think they'll be fine, though. I think they'll be fine up front.
So all in all, quarterback's the same guy. I think running room is a downgrade. I think receiving room is a downgrade. And O-line is a push to maybe downgrade.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can sort of... I guess I'm a little surprised they got 3 first place votes in the conference. Because I don't know if this team would have won the conference last year, and at least looking at the offensive side of the ball, I don't think they're better this year. So transition to defense.
Yeah.
The defensive line. Just the very first thing that stands out to me. You go to Our Lads and you pull up their projected depth chart. They run a 4-2-5. You look at your 4 linemen, all the starters are projected transfers. You look at the 2 deep, 3 of those 4 are transfers. So 7 of your 8 dudes in the 2 deep are brand new. And that's an orange flag for me, at least, just in terms of you're really, even if you get talent in, I'm just a little weary of transfers like you coming in and having like an entire unit be refreshed. Another good name, I guess is it Uyunglele, or it's very, very similar.
I imagine it's a little brother, and I say little as in younger, not like, yeah, not smaller.
He's your only returning guy on the D line. And he was a 69.6 PFF grade last year. So, you know, solid contributor. But yeah, you got guys coming from all over the place. Do you have any notes on these transfers coming in? Anybody to watch here?
I think, yeah, starting with Uyagale, he was a 5 technique last year. So he was an outside defensive end on a 4-man front, and he's playing inside this year. He's moving down to the 3 technique. So even the guy you got coming back is playing a new position, right? But yeah, no, I mean, just running through some of the transfers on the inside, they have Chuba Maye from UC Davis transfer, 6'2", 347. Fine grades, but, you know, a guy that big, you're getting 300 snaps max out of him a season, you know, I think. Other one, Kevin Darton, followed Babers from Syracuse. Solid grades, but for an interior defensive lineman, he's 5'11", 270, right? So a little undersized. Then the other one in the interior rotation, Jara Anderson from Memphis, 6'2", 260. Decent grades again, but, like, a little light in the ass, right, for interior defensive linemen. I think, you know, moving outside to the edge, Stanley Taufu, transfer from USC, high recruit, 3-year contributor, but never had more than 10 pressures in a season and never more than replacement level grades on PFF. So, you know, like not a splash signing. You know, I think the one guy who had nice grades, San Jose State guy, Trey Smith, had a 75 PFF grade last year, 43 pressures, 8 sacks. Those are your starters. Can Smith make the jump from San Jose State to Power 4 and, you know, kind of replicate or at least approach that production? I guess we'll see. The other guys in the rotation there, Lance Kenley from Stanford, replacement level contributor for a couple years, and Chase Kennedy from Utah, who has 73 total snaps over the last 2 seasons. So, this defensive line, they were good last year. It was a solid defensive front last year. This year, I mean, I can't imagine that they're good. Maybe they're okay. Like, I feel like average okay is kind of the ceiling of this group. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
turnover, looking who they brought in. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just saying, sitting here in August, I would say on paper, and with the unknown, you just got new guys in, completely new unit. Some guys more proven than others, new coaches. Like, it's just a new situation. So I definitely want to lean and say that's the strength of their defense right now. Stepping back to the linebackers, the 4-2-5, just two guys. They're getting them both back. Jacob Manu is actually all Big 12 and maybe a head scratcher if you look at PFF stuff, because he really didn't grade out that well last year. He led them in snaps, 758, top snap getter on the defense. It's a 63 PFF grade. So all Big 12 does not subscribe maybe to the analytics, but 30 pressures. He was their tied for second on your team from the linebacker position. So
seven sacks too is what I assume that the media is looking at with that all Big 12 selection. But yeah, I mean, if you look at the coverage numbers, was picked on in coverage, okay tackler, like, but you know, missed his share of tackles. The other guy is who I think is the most intriguing, man, Justin Flo. I know you don't follow recruiting like I do, but feels kind of like a now or never year for this guy, because, dude, he was the absolute shit. This was the number one linebacker recruit in the country coming out of high school.
Wow.
Committed to Oregon. Subpar grades there. Transferred out to Arizona, obviously, and started last year. Was a subpar grade at Arizona last year. You know, again, honestly, looked like he played himself out of the starting lineups a couple times. Like, if you could just go look at his game log, it's like the first three games he started, and then it's like played, and the snaps significantly drop off, and then it's like, all right, we got to give this guy another shot, start, and then back out of the starting lineup, right? So, I don't know. It seemed like he got his chance and lost it a couple times last year. His career, it doesn't make sense to me. It's like clearly why I'm not a scout in college, because like this guy's highlights coming out of high school, fucking ridiculous. I mean, he destroyed people, like, you know, and so I don't know. They lose their best guy by grade, rotational guy, Martell Irby. I think some of the rotation's back, but yeah, like you said, you know, Manu's a good pass rusher, but maybe a little subpar as a run defender and as a coverage guy. Flo has all the tools, but has not done anything with him at this point. So I don't know. I mean, it's not one of the better linebacker rooms we've graded so far.
No, definitely not.
The talent's there, I'm sure, but performance has not been there.
Yeah, I mean, Flo was a 53 last year, PFF grade. Yeah. Manu, you know, he does get the PFF benefit on the pass rush, 79.4. I'd say for a linebacker, that's pretty good. But yeah, kind of pedestrian across the way of the rest of the stuff. So, yeah, I mean, first two units, the front six here, not, you know, inspiring a ton of confidence, at least to me. Okay. So let's look at the secondary, another all Big 12 guy. So, you know, they have two all Big 12 dudes on defense here, Takerio Davis. And yeah, his grade lines up. So last year he was an 85.5 at the cornerback position. Yeah, an 87.5 in coverage. I mean, pretty huge. You know, if you throw against him, you got about a 40% chance it's going to get caught. He had about a pass breakup a game. Yeah, I mean, really good player. This is going to be the best corner they have. One of the better corners in the whole league, obviously. You have one transfer coming in, Jono Price. He's going to be your only fresh guy in this unit. Any guys you want to highlight here, Jordan?
No, I mean, you highlighted the guy. I think you have to say this is the established strength of the defense. You have four of the five starters back. Davis was the best. Traden Stukes, Gunnar Maldonado, Dalton Johnson all started, all played a lot, all played really well last year. So I think you gotta look at this as the strength of the defense. I think the concern is Price, like you mentioned. So he's a JUCO dude, was not recruited out of high school, and was, you know, basically no established history of like high performance, like even at the JUCO level, right? Like, I think this is a guy who is committed to, basically this is a San Diego or San Jose State transfer. Like, this is a guy who they're recruiting to play at San Jose State. The coaching staff moved and I'm sure told him, hey, your offer stands if you want to come here. And so like the fact that he's penciled in as a starter, possible red flag, but I think overall the secondary is the, like, if you're looking at the defense, secondary is the best part of it. Yeah, man. I mean, overall, you're looking at this defense. I think it's right up there with Pitt as the worst front six, front seven that we've graded. You return, obviously, Uiagalelei is only one of your top 10 defensive linemen by pressures last year. You lose 113 of 131 pressures. And the only potential impact guy is like a guy from San Jose State who, you know, can he do it at power four? I guess we'll find out. Secondary, I think, should be good. But, you know, I mean, my concern is you look at the teams they played in the Pac-12 last year, right? None of them were going to line up and just ram the ball down their throat. Like, I think I looked up the stats. Arizona only faced eight opponents who ran it more than 30 times and only two who ran it more than 40. Four teams on the schedule this year, us, Kansas State, UCF, Utah. We ran it 40-plus times in 11 games. We ran it 50-plus in two games. K-State, 40-plus 7, 50-plus twice. UCF, 40-plus 7, 50-plus twice. Utah, 40-plus 8, 50-plus 4. So there are four teams on their schedule this year who are going to be like looking at this defensive front and being like, hey, why should we throw it to Cario Davis?
Seriously.
Why should we ever fucking throw the ball? You know, so I guess my concern with this defense, I think the secondary is going to be good, but like they're going to be forced to play big boy football this year. And I'm not sure that the front six is quite ready for that year one.
Yeah, I think that's a great call. Definitely on paper, looking a little soft in the front six. One other quick note, special teams, they do have a place kicker, all Big 12 guy, Tyler Loop. Sure. So what, that is four all Big 12 guys. Not bad. I mean, for newcomer stepping in, you get four guys on the list. You know, we've talked about teams who had no guys on the list and were ranked higher than they were in these media polls. Yeah. So let's get into our climb index. I'll start it off with cohesion. I gave them a two. Not great. I think new coaches all around, a new backfield, a new front six. And you're probably going to be looking for new contributors in the pass catchers. I don't know that, you know, that there's a lot of new faces around. So I gave him a 2 out of 5.
So I gave him a 3, which maybe is a half a point too high. The coaching staff thing, obviously I didn't consider. I was just looking at the players, really just a stupid guy doing stupid stuff. The reason I gave him a 3 though, is that the pieces they do bring back, Fifita, premier quarterback in the conference, arguably in the country, T-Mac, premier receiver in the country, most of a pretty good offensive line back, and most of a pretty good secondary back. So, you know, I think despite the turnover, they do bring back some pretty nice pieces.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. And I didn't mention this in the receiving. I have a comment under my receivers. It's like, is anyone else good enough to, you know, when McMillan's going to get extra attention, you know,
he
might be worth more than one guy. He's that good. So, you know, some of those things definitely can play a role. In terms of losses, I gave them a 2 as well. You mentioned several guys to the league. You also, I took extra points off for losing a massive contributor to the portal, because that's one that it's not an eligibility problem. You lost him. So now I'm talking about Jonah Coleman. So I gave him a 2 out of 5 on losses.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, despite all I said about the returners, ton of firepower offensively. And you know, you referenced like this has been a bad program for a little while. So, you know, like there are programs who can lose five NFL guys and they're fine the next year because the next five guys up are also NFL guys, but not sure that Arizona is one of those programs. Yeah, you lose a ton of offensive firepower and the entire defensive line. So yeah, 2 out of 5.
Infusion is I gave him a 3.5. And that's in terms of understanding that you need an entire new, you know, defensive line and going out and getting it. Of your 22 projected starters, 8 of them are transfers. They were busy in the portal. I think a lot of it was out of necessity. We'll see who pans out. I think you could sell a lot of upside on these guys, and there's some downside for sure as well. So I think they did all right. 3.5.
I just said 3. 83rd rated high school recruiting class. Nobody sniffing the 2 deep at this point. You mentioned the transfers, 24, so the volume's there, but the quality, I'm not sure. I think the enticing pools are the two running backs, look pretty productive. And I do think that running back is one position where it's probably easier to step up than others, because if holes are there, these guys are going to find them, right? Like I generally think it's probably easier to find like a pretty good running back than a lot of other positions. And you know, like you said, they've needed to replace the whole defensive line, and they did with, you know, a couple of Power Five transfers in the mix. So, you know, I think only three though, because despite the volume, not seeing anything that like fully replaces what they lost or raises the ceiling at all.
Yeah, fair. The menu, what's their schedule looking like?
I got it here. Oh, well, so I said 3 out of 5. But schedule is New Mexico at home, Northern Arizona home, at Kansas State in a non-conference game, which is shitty.
Weird one.
Then at Utah to open their Big 12 slate, Texas Tech at home, at BYU, Colorado and WVU at home, at UCF, Houston, at TCU, Arizona State at home. Yet another team I would gladly trade with, 3 out of 5. I think that Kansas State, Utah, both on the road back to back in September is going to be brutal for them. And then they get us and UCF back to back. But those are the only two tough stretches. I think they're lucky to miss Kansas and Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State, especially, in light of what I said about their defense, was probably a shitty matchup for them. So lucky to miss them. But yeah, 3 out of 5.
I said 3.5, and basically same stuff. I said I hate the first two real games for them. You mentioned the out-of-conference game, and then Utah. That's a rough welcome, but then not terrible. I mean, in this league, can't ask for much better. So, yeah, I'd take it. Do you have a good benefactor? Do you have a good corporate sponsor for them?
Disney? Bounce House? So here's my angle is that they strike me as this year's version of last year's UCF. And I kind of already went through all the reasons of fun pieces, fun narratives. And they definitely have talent enough to probably compete and score points and probably beat teams, you know, on a given week. But I don't think they're equipped for the grind in the Big 12 this year. So I think they're going to have a very 2023 UCF season this year.
Gotcha. I don't think I could find a company that fits the idea I'm going for, but I'm going for like a construction contracting company. Cause they said, hey, listen, we need a bunch of dudes to do the dirty work on the D line. We have none of them, and we're going to sign you up and you're going to do the hard labor for us. That's sort of what I'm looking at here. I don't know. I guess this is just the era of college football we live in, but it's still just cracking me up that basically their entire two deep is just new faces. They're just, that's for hire.
Yeah, not ideal, but hey, they ride out nonetheless. So,
yeah. All right. Anything else on Arizona? Are you excited to play them this year? You excited to run for 350 on them?
I actually am excited to play them. I think we match up really well with them.
Yeah. We play them on their, I'm looking at their schedule right now. They have us as the family weekend. So, sorry about that.
Shouldn't have done that.
Yep. All right. Cool. So, you can get at us on smokingmusket.com. You can find us on Twitter. If you are not a part of the Discord, definitely should join it for Smoking Musket. Sounds like we have a PlayStation Dynasty going on for the new college football game. Oh, yeah. And as we approach football season, you definitely want to be in there for all the news and all the nonsense, really. Just, I mean, yeah, if you're watching the game, if it's on TV, somebody else is watching it, and it's a good time. So
yeah, dude, it has taken on a life of its own. Like there are wheels within wheels inside, and all the tenets of a fantastic online community are present in the Musket Discord. So yeah, hop in if you're not.
For sure. All right. That's all I got. Thank you guys, as always, for listening, and we will catch you next time.
All right. Take care, gang.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.